You know what's on everyone's wish list this year?
Oh, definitely the Bartesian Cocktail Maker.
It's like having a bartender who never judges your drink order.
Exactly. Just pop in a capsule, press a button, boom. Old fashioned, margarita, espresso martini.
Over 60 bar quality cocktails. Zero effort.
And right now, you can save up to $150 on Bartesian Cocktail Makers.
Wait, 150?
Yep, up to $150 off. It's the best deal of the season.
Okay, but seriously, how did we ever host before Bartesian?
Last time your kitchen looked like a crime scene. Sticky counters, fruit wedges everywhere.
Yeah, this year, no measuring tools, no mess, just perfect cocktails.
This year, I'm gifting one to my brother.
And myself, for research purposes.
Make the holidays easier and happier with Bartesian. Mix over 60 premium cocktails at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. But hurry, this Black Friday and Cyber Monday offer ends December 2nd. Get yours now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
I've asked it many times on this show. How can someone just vanish out of existence? How can someone with a whole life and community just cease to be without a trace? But even more confounding, how can three people get erased from the earth, leaving almost no evidence behind? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. Sometimes I marvel at how lucky I am that I was never snatched and/or murdered while I was running around the streets of New York in my teens, acting like a complete lunatic with no sense of my own mortality. The things I did and places I went with complete strangers absolutely horrifies me now to think about. Who knows how many near misses I had? But it turns out one doesn't have to be testing the limits of one's own safety in order to meet with disaster. Turns out you can bloop right out of existence from the comfort and safety of your own home. High school graduation is, for most people, the end of one era and the beginning of a new one. It's a milestone that marks when we leave childhood behind and step into our future as adults. Some of us go to college, some of us go to work, some of us travel. Others get their first apartment. People come of age in different ways, but everyone who attends their high school graduation knows that they are leaving their former life behind to embrace something new that usually brings with it greater responsibility and greater freedom. It's exciting, and it can be scary. But for three women in Springfield, Missouri in 1992, it might have been scary for all the wrong reasons. For 18-year-old Stacy McCall and 19-year-old Suzanne Streeter, their high school graduation unfolded as most do, with pomp and ceremony, celebration and family and pride. But that is where things stopped being normal. On June 7, 1992, in the early morning after the graduation ceremony, Stacy and Susie, along with Susie's mother Cheryl, disappeared from Cheryl and Susie's home and were never heard from again. Today, their case is no closer to being solved than it was 33 years ago. What happened to the Springfield Three? June June 6th, 1992 was a happy and exciting day for Stacy and Susie and their classmates. The teenagers were preparing to attend graduation from Kickapoo High School. After the ceremony, there would be a slew of celebrations to follow. One of Susie's friends even dropped a graduation cake off for her. After all, graduation is a time to remember. Susie's mother, Cheryl, attended the graduation ceremony where she watched her daughter walk across the stage, no doubt beaming with pride and considering the bright future that stretched before Susie and the rest of her classmates. Cheryl and Susie had moved to the Springfield area in 1980 when Susie was about 6 years old. They'd relocated from Seattle after Cheryl divorced her first husband, Brent Streeter. Eventually, Cheryl remarried, but her marriage to Don Levitt also did not last, and they divorced in 1989. Her second divorce left Cheryl with financial challenges. Don Levitt, it turns out, owed money to creditors. Cheryl was being hounded by bill collectors, trying to make her pay her husband's debts. Cheryl's credit was tarnished, and the attempts to collect Don's debt continued even after Cheryl divorced him. Still, Cheryl forged on and took care of her daughter Susie, with whom she was very close. Cheryl got a job at the New Attitudes Hair Salon in Springfield in 1992, where, according to thecharlieproject.org, she was considered a model employee. In April of 1992, just before Susie's graduation, to save money, the mother and daughter moved into a small apartment on East Delmar Street. On the evening of June 6, 1992, the only future Susie and her best friend Stacy were likely thinking about was the fun they planned to have at the graduation parties they would attend later that night. The girls arrived at their first party of the night in the Battlefield neighborhood of Springfield at about 8:30. They were there with another friend and fellow graduate Janelle Kirby. The girls stayed about an hour, and then they left to attend a party hosted by another friend, a girl named Michelle Elder. They remained at Michelle's party until the party was broken up by the cops around 1:50 a.m. on June 7th. While the girls were living out their John Hughes dreams at their friend's house, Susie's mom, Cheryl, was unwinding at home by refinishing a piece of furniture. As she worked, she chatted on the phone to a friend. The two remained on the phone for a couple of hours, keeping each other company from 9:30 to 11:15 p.m. At 10:30, Susie checked in, calling home to let her mom know that she and Stacy would be staying the night at Janelle's house. When the three girls got to Janelle's around 2 a.m. on June 7th, they realized that their friend had so much family from out of town staying at her house to celebrate her graduation that there just wasn't room for them to crash there. They said goodnight to Janelle and headed to Susie's instead. They told Janelle they would return in the morning, as they all had plans to go to a water park in Branson, Missouri together to celebrate their first day as high school graduates. Janelle said goodbye to her friends, and based on when they left her, Susie and Stacy should have arrived at Susie's house at about 2:15 or 2:30 a.m. When morning came, Susie and Stacy did not return to Janelle's as planned. Janelle called Susie at 8 a.m., but there was no answer. She called several times over the next hour, but only got the answering machine, where she left multiple messages. Janelle didn't think anything of it at the time. They had all been out late. Susie and Stacy just probably overslept. Later that day, when she still hadn't heard from them at 12:30 p.m., Janelle and her boyfriend Mike Henson drove over to Susie's house to get the girls out of bed so they could get on the road to the water park. When they arrived, Janelle hopped out of the car barefoot to run up the steps to the front door, but before she could, she noticed broken glass on the front steps. The front porch light bulb was illuminated, even though it was afternoon, but the globe that had covered it was shattered on the porch. So, that was odd. According to a three-part series in the Springfield News Leader from 2006, quote, "Someone or something must have bumped it," she thought. No big deal. As a favor to Susie's mom, Janelle's boyfriend Mike grabbed a broom, swept up the glass, and dumped it in the garbage, end quote. It was a nice gesture, but one that would have unfortunate implications later. After Mike swept up the glass, Janelle peeked into Susie's house through the front window to see if anyone was awake. Everything seemed normal, if very quiet, to her. The cars were all in the driveway, though, so she knew her friends had to be there somewhere. It was a warm, sunny June day, so Janelle went into the backyard to check to see if the girls might be there sunbathing. No dice. Janelle guessed her friends were still asleep. She opened the front door, and Susie's little Yorkie Cinnamon went crazy barking and surprised Janelle by jumping straight into her arms. Janelle, holding the dog, called out for Stacy, Susie, and Cheryl, but the house was perfectly still. No one was there. While Janelle and Mike were looking around Cheryl and Susie's house, Janelle answered what she later described as a disturbing phone call from a strange man. The voice on the phone evidently was an obscene phone caller who made sexual innuendos. Janelle hung up the phone when she heard what he had to say, but the man immediately called back. It was odd and creepy, but again seemed unrelated to the situation at the time. Janelle and Mike continued to look through the house. According to the piece in the Springfield News Leader, Janelle looked through the rooms of the house and noticed, quote, Susie's bed covers were pulled back. The room was a little messy, but nothing unusual for a teenager. The women's purses were still in the house, piled up on the steps of Susie's sunken bedroom, end quote. Purses piled up on the step like some kind of set piece out of True Detective seems weird to me, stranger. What struck Janelle as really weird was that, quote, Susie and her mother Cheryl had left behind their cigarettes. That was odd, Janelle thought. The two were constantly smoking and rarely went anywhere without smokes, end quote. I know that will probably seem weird to you too, stranger, but for entirely different reasons than it did for Janelle. What can I say? It was the 90s. For some reason, everyone still smoked in the 90s. Call it group psychosis brought on by too much exposure to Dynasty in the 80s. At one point in the 90s in my house, my dad, my older sister, and I were all secretly smoking out our own bedroom windows. Anyway, at this point, Janelle and Mike didn't know what to think. They wondered if Susie and Stacy had gone to another friend's house, but when they visited him to ask, he was still sleeping and had not seen the girls at all. Janelle and Mike were starting to worry. They thought about all the places the girls and Susie's mom might have gone without their cars. They checked a neighborhood sandwich shop. They looked for them on the local streets, thinking maybe they had gone for a walk, but they came up empty. The truth was, they really had no clue where their friends had gone, but they didn't assume anything nefarious had happened. Why would they? Eventually, Janelle and Mike decided to go to a water park in Springfield instead of the one in Branson they had originally planned on. I doubt their day was the fun and carefree time everyone had planned.
Every year, I promise myself I'll find the perfect gift.
Something they'll actually use.
And love. This year, I found it. The Bartesian Cocktail Maker.
Oh, that's the one that makes cocktails at the push of a button, right?
Exactly. Over 60 bar-quality drinks from martinis to margaritas. Perfectly crafted every time.
I got one for my sister. And maybe for myself, too.
Smart. It's the season of giving and sipping.
And right now, you can save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers.
That's a real holiday miracle.
Because the best gifts bring people together and make the holidays a little easier.
Give the gift of better cocktails this season with Bartesian. Mix over 60 premium drinks at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. Don't wait. This offer ends December 2nd. Shop now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
While the kids were getting splashed with dirty pee-pee flume water at Silver Dollar City or wherever, Stacy's mother, Janice McCall, was miffed because she hadn't heard from her daughter since graduation. Janice called Janelle's house, where she believed her daughter had stayed since Stacy had not called her mom the night before to tell her about the change in plans. Janelle's sister answered the phone and explained that they had no room at the inn and Stacy had actually gone to Susie's to sleep in her new king-size waterbed. I guess Susie and her mom had moved into a smaller apartment, but Susie still had the luxury of a bed, which was essentially a giant water balloon. If you're under 40, you have probably never slept in a waterbed. Sleeping in one is akin to being a hot dog in a water-filled bun that squeezes you, and if your bobby pin or whatever accidentally pierces it, you wake up thinking you peed. A lot. So, yeah, luxury. Again, it was the early 90s. Once she learned her kid was not at Janelle's, Janice called Susie's and left a message telling Stacy to please call her. Then, a little later, Stacy's family went to Lake Springfield to watch a miniature boat race. She called over to Susie's several times over the course of the day. According to the Springfield News leader, quote, "As the day wore on, Janice's voice on Susie's answering machine was getting more frantic, her concern evident. Her worry grew when she got a call from a friend, the mother of one of Stacy's close friends. Are you aware Stacy's purse and her car and Susie's car is still at Cheryl's house, but the girls aren't?" End quote. I have no idea who this person was or how they knew this, but the information certainly worried Janice, who got tired of calling and decided to go over to Susie's house. And again, I know you kids out there are like, called her house? Answering machine? What in the world? But yeah. There was a time when phones were stationary, and you called people at home, and you left messages on answering machines. People couldn't just track you down anywhere, anytime, and blow up your phone. And honestly, until right now, I would have said all of that was preferable to the on-demand style of communication we have today, but now I can't help but wonder what might have been different in this case if everyone had cell phones. Anyway. Janice stopped by the house on Del Mar. At this point, Janice had not just been calling the house all day and leaving messages to reach her daughter, but she had also contacted people she knew at the water park in Branson, where the kids were supposed to be, only to learn that Stacy was not there. When Janice arrived at the Del Mar house, she went right in, noting, as Janelle had, that the dog came barreling towards her. Janice saw some of the things that Janelle had seen when she visited earlier in the day, such as all three women's purses piled up on the step. Janice looked inside Cheryl's purse and discovered that it contained over $800 in cash. Why on earth would Cheryl leave the house for the entire day and leave her purse there with all that money inside? Janice also saw her daughter's clothes were neatly folded. Her shorts had her jewelry tucked into the pockets. Her sandals sat beside Susie's waterbed. This gave her pause, as she knew that those were the only clothes Stacy had with her. What was going on here? Janice investigated further and found used makeup wipes, suggesting the girls had arrived there the night before and had gotten ready for bed. Janice noticed Susie and Cheryl's cigarettes, as Janelle had, and also made the connection that Cheryl, a known chain smoker, would never go anywhere without her cigarettes. When Janice went into Susie's room, she noticed the lights were off, the TV was on, but only showing snow. To her, this made it seem like the girls had watched a movie or something, but had never turned the TV off. She also noticed that Stacy left behind her migraine medication. With all of these strange details confronting her and no information about where her daughter or Susie and Cheryl might be, Janice called the police. She also checked the answering machine and later reported listening to a weird message which either automatically erased or was accidentally erased by her. Police believe the message was important, but also do not believe it was connected to the prank calls Janelle got when she was in the house. Why they came to this conclusion, I have no idea. After Janice's report, the Springfield Police Department formally began investigating the disappearance of Stacy McCall, Susie Streeter, and and Cheryl Levitt the next day. When they arrived at the scene, the police saw no signs of struggle other than the broken light cover on the porch. They noted that Cheryl's bed looked slept in. The report said the blinds in her window looked awkwardly bent, as if someone had been peering outside. A book was overturned in Cheryl's bedroom, indicating that she may have been reading when she was last there. It is highly unlikely that the women disappeared of their own volition. All three women had upcoming plans or appointments. Stacy was scheduled to work the following Monday, Cheryl had a doctor's appointment that Monday, and Susie was scheduled to work on Tuesday. And obviously, the girls had made social plans for which they never showed. Not to mention that unless she was clad head to toe in Susie's clothes, Stacy would have departed wearing only underwear and a t-shirt. The response to the disappearance was swift and significant. Searches were conducted by both police and volunteers on foot and horseback. In the first 48 hours, over 20,000 posters were printed and distributed. The three women were featured on an episode of America's Most Wanted by the end of the first week. More searches were conducted based on tips that came in after that episode. The show 48 Hours also shadowed the investigation for several weeks. On June 9th, the FBI was called in to assist in the investigation, and every detective in the SPD was assigned to the case. On June 15th, the police went back to the house on East Del Mar to follow up one such tip that a transient man was seen hanging around the house in the days before the women disappeared. A composite sketch of the man was made and released to the public. About 2 weeks after the three women disappeared, a waitress at a nearby George's Steakhouse, Cheryl's favorite restaurant, reported that the three women were there on the night in question between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. She said in her report that the three women arrived and left together and that Susie appeared giddy and likely very drunk and that Cheryl was trying to calm her down. This doesn't make much sense to me because Susie and Stacy would have only arrived at Susie's house between 2:15 and 2:30, so they couldn't have arrived at the steakhouse all together at 1. Maybe the waitress got the time wrong and the three women arrived sometime after 2:30, but then it seems unlikely that they left by 3, unless they didn't order anything. And also, what the hell kind of steakhouse is open until 3 a.m.? As I mentioned, police and media response to the case was relatively quick, so I am not sure why it took the waitress so long to report this sighting. Maybe she didn't have a TV? People used to not have TVs all the time, and there was no social media, so maybe it really just took her weeks to figure out that she had waited on three women who went missing the very next day? I don't know. The waitress did not report seeing anyone else with the three women, though there were sightings on June 7th of a moss-green Dodge van being driven by a woman who matched Susie's description. According to a page about the Springfield Three maintained by the Charlie Project, a witness reported seeing, quote, three terrified-looking women in the same van and then heard an unseen male say, "Don't do anything stupid," end quote. Again, reports of this were not made for several days after the investigation was launched. What in the world? Why? What were people doing in 1992 that they weren't reporting this suspicious activity? Watching City Slickers? Waiting for Young MC to become a two-hit wonder? Waiting for Al Gore to invent the internet? Another witness saw a blonde woman sitting in the driver's seat of a van matching the same description in the parking lot of a grocery store. This wonder of the world said he wrote down the license plate number, but then he threw it away before he contacted the police. What in the red hot chili peppers was happening in this town? Police attempted to hypnotize the witness to recall the plate number he put in the trash, but he was only ever able to recall the first three digits. Between the police hypnotizing him and him throwing out the useful information before calling to report said useful information, this is starting to feel like an episode of Police Squad. And then there was the witness who reported hearing screaming and squealing tires in the early hours of June 7th in eastern Greene County. The area was searched, but nothing was found. I really don't know how long after the 7th the witness waited to make this report, but I can only assume from these other accounts that it was 30 to 120 business days. The police kept investigating the case and following up on tips and probably wishing Janelle and Mike hadn't thrown away that broken glass and that John Q. Public of Springfield would call in reports of suspicious activity before watching marathons of The Real World. On December 31, 1992, the America's Most Wanted hotline received a call following an episode featuring Stacy, Susie, and Cheryl, with what was believed to be an important tip. Somehow, the call was accidentally disconnected by the operator as she was trying to transfer the call directly to the Springfield Police Department. Because of course it was. Public pleas were made for the caller to reach back out, but he never did. I guess he was busy. You know me, stranger, I'm not big on conspiracy theories, but this is beginning to smell like some weird cover-up. Unfortunately, strange clues, sightings, and tips aside, the police never discovered anything conclusive about what happened to the Springfield Three. And it's really a shame, because so far, this seems like one of the few missing persons cases where I can't blame the police for shoddy detective work. Or can I?
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
The police who investigated the disappearance have said that they believe 10 to 20 people inadvertently contaminated the crime scene. This is a detail I read on Wikipedia, but a similar narrative also appears on the Charlie Project's page about the disappearance, which talks about the possibility that the police chief mishandled the investigation for at least the first year following the disappearance. It also mentions that this allegation is contentious. Here is what the Charlie Project says about it. Quote, "Several officials charged the former chief of police of impeding their investigation into the case in the late 1990s. Others dispute that contention and said that little evidence was available in the case from its onset. One of the original investigators theorized that the woman's assailants took cinnamon out of Cheryl's yard during the overnight hours of June 7th in an effort to gain access to the residence. The officer speculated that the attackers knocked on the door, pretending to have rescued the dog after he wandered away from the home. The investigator theorized that one of the women may have opened the door to retrieve cinnamon and was overpowered by the assailants." End quote. The cinnamon theory is just one of several theories that emerged as the investigation continued, and still, the women weren't found, and no one was apprehended. The police also stated that the crime could have been committed by a single person. The FBI reports back this idea up, stating that, quote, if a second person was involved, it was likely they didn't know what the primary perpetrator was planning on until it happened, end quote. Authorities also thought that the perpetrator had a large vehicle like a van, a moss green one, and that they had to have some familiarity with the area. Authorities also considered the possibilities that Cheryl was the target of the attack, as she was the only one that anyone could know for sure would be home that night. Or that Susie was the target because she, quote, ran with a bad crowd, whatever that means. And they also theorized that the abduction was random and that the perpetrator followed Stacy and Susie home after seeing them by chance. So either it was planned or it wasn't. Either it was perpetrated by one person or it wasn't. Either one woman was targeted or they all were. Got it. Great police work. Most authorities and sources did seem to agree that the women were abducted against their will. The police did follow leads and interview and investigate a number of suspects. An article in the Springfield New Leader reported on June 14, 1992, quote, "Law officers' sweeping search of wooded areas and streams in the Springfield area begins. Officers also search the Bolivar Road apartments after someone leaves a letter in a newsleader rack at Smitty's 218 South Glenstone Avenue. The letter contains a rough drawing of the apartment complex with the phrase, use ruse of gas man checking for leak," end quote. I couldn't find this information anywhere else, but the gas leak thing does come up again, so it's kind of interesting. The Springfield Daily Citizen in 2022 reported, quote, "In the first days of the probe, police openly talked about interviewing and polygraphing people like Susie Streeter's ex-boyfriend, Dustin Rekla, and also her brother and Cheryl's son, Bart Streeter, who was estranged from the family but cooperated with the investigation. Streeter said he drank heavily the night of June 6, 1992, and passed out. He passed a police polygraph, and explaining the interviews, the chief of police at the time, Terry Knowles, said that they were among the 3 to 5 that we have a focal interest in a June 10, 1992 interview with the Springfield News Leader. When the initial investigation slowed, detectives turned their attention to others. Officially, police say no one has been cleared, but all leads also fizzled into dead ends, and no one has ever been charged," end quote. Among those others police investigated was Gerald Carnahan. Carnahan was a local businessman who first came into the public eye in 1985 when he became a suspect in the beating and murder of another local woman by the name of Jackie Johns. Jackie's body was found in Lake Springfield. The police believed Carnahan lied about his alibi before a grand jury. All charges against Carnahan were later dismissed, but the police seemed to like to dig up old Carnahan whenever a local murder occurred. They also named him as a suspect when Debbie Sue Lewis disappeared in 1987 in very similar circumstances to Jackie Johns. Carnahan was never charged or arrested for her death, but the police clearly did not trust this guy. They arrested him in 1993 for the attempted abduction of yet another woman, and for this crime, he was convicted and spent 2 years in prison. Police could not find evidence tying Carnahan to the Springfield 3 case, but I guess in his case, the cops weren't wrong because in 2007, Carnahan's DNA was matched to DNA found in the Jackie Johns case, and he was charged and convicted of first-degree murder and forcible rape and sentenced to life in prison. Another person of interest in the case was Stephen Garrison. In September 1995, Garrison told the Springfield News Leader that police had questioned him as a suspect in the missing women case. Garrison, a member of a local motorcycle gang at the time, told police that he knew what had happened to the women. He promised more information on the case if investigators would help him get out of jail for unrelated weapons charges. He told police that he had overheard someone bragging about killing the three women and leaving their bodies at a hog farm in Webster County. Police say Garrison provided other information to them that was not publicly known. A judge lowered Garrison's bail, and following his release, he was put up in a hotel by the police. Garrison promptly fled. A few days later, he broke into a woman's apartment in Springfield and attacked her. She survived and testified against him. He is currently serving out a 40-year sentence for rape, sodomy, burglary, and robbery. Susie's ex-boyfriend, Dustin Rekla, who was interviewed by police, had been arrested a few months before the disappearance for breaking into a local mausoleum and stealing $30 worth of gold fillings from a skull. Maybe this is the bad crowd the police said Susie ran with? When Dustin was investigated for the break-in, Susie cooperated with the police and made a statement to the police about what she knew. The police figured that probably didn't make Dustin too happy with Susie, and Dustin and his two friends, who also participated in the burglary, were known to be in the area of the Delmar house on the night of the abduction. But I guess this line of investigation was also ultimately fruitless. Possibly one of the police's best suspects in the disappearance was a man named Robert Craig Cox. According to the Springfield Citizen, quote, "Robert Craig Cox was a one-time Army Ranger and death row inmate. A Florida jury in 1988 convicted him of the slaying of a Walt Disney World clerk a decade earlier. Citing a lack of credible evidence tying Cox to the slaying, the state Supreme Court reversed his conviction and ordered his release in 1990. Cox came back to his childhood hometown, Springfield. He was here in 1992. Several years later, police questioned him about the missing women. Cox told reporters that he knew the women were dead, but did not provide any further details. Cox was arrested in 1995 for holding a gun on a child during a robbery in Texas. He's serving a life sentence. Cox said police had questioned him about the three missing women in 1992 and again in 1996. When asked directly by the news leader if he abducted the women, Cox said in March 1996, "That's a frivolous question. Obviously, I'm going to say no," end quote. Obviously. But in 1997, Cox said more. He told journalists that he knew something about the abduction and murder of the three women and that their bodies would never be found. Bear in mind, stranger, that the Springfield Citizen's account of Cox's crimes really only scratched the surface. Cox was previously convicted of abducting, raping, and killing 19-year-old Disney employee Sharon Zeller. He abducted her at some point during her drive home from work in 1978. He was initially sentenced to death for his crime, but he was released in 1989 following a ruling from the Florida Supreme Court that the jury did not have enough evidence to convict him. So, yeah, Cox was a bad dude.
Every year, I promise myself I'll find the perfect gift.
Something they'll actually use.
And love. This year, I found it. The Bartesian Cocktail Maker.
Oh, that's the one that makes cocktails at the push of a button, right?
Exactly! Over 60 bar-quality drinks, from martinis to margaritas, perfectly crafted every time. I got one for my sister, and maybe for myself, too.
Smart. It's the season of giving and sipping.
And right now, you can save up to $150 on Bartesian Cocktail Makers.
That's a real holiday miracle.
Because the best gifts bring people together and make the holidays a little easier.
Give the gift of better cocktails this season with Bartesian. Mix over 60 premium drinks at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian Cocktail Makers. Don't wait. This offer ends December 2nd. Shop now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Cox Cox told authorities that he was at church the morning after the abductions. His girlfriend backed up his alibi at the time, but she later retracted, telling investigators he told her to tell them that. Cox also stated, as part of his alibi, that he was home at his parents' house when the women went missing. They also backed him up. Another damning detail about Cox is that he worked as a utility worker in Springfield at the time of the abductions. One theory held by the police was that someone posing as a utility worker may have knocked on the door to warn of a gas leak and lured the women out of the house on the night of their disappearance. The article titled Three Missing Women 10 Years Later in the Springfield News Leader reported, quote, in a letter to the News Leader last month, Cox said that in the summer of 1992, he worked as a locator at SM&P Conduit Incorporated, a Springfield company that locates and marks underground utilities. I have done locates all over Springfield, Cox wrote. I have done work in the area of the house where the abduction occurred, end quote. And it wasn't just police who thought Cox might be responsible for the disappearance of the three women. Dorothy Zeller, the mother of Sharon Zeller, who Cox was convicted and then exonerated of murdering, believed he might be responsible as well. In total obsessed Mama Bear fashion, she had kept track of Cox in the years following his release. She watched the episode of America's Most Wanted that covered the abduction, and the News Leader reported that she instantly thought of Cox, whom she knew lived in Springfield. She talked about it with her son and husband and then contacted the Springfield Police Department. Crime Watch Daily and the Charlie Project report that authorities were ultimately unsure if Cox was really involved in the case or if he was seeking attention and issuing false statements. Cox stated to authorities and journalists that he would give more information about the three women later. He promised to talk more after his mother died. As of a 2022 article in artfulliving.com, Cox's mother is still alive and Cox is eligible for parole this year, 2025. Police have not been able to successfully link him to the crime in spite of his many leading and questionable statements. The crazy thing about Robert Craig Cox as a suspect is that he was interviewed within 6 months of the disappearance, but he was moved on from as he gave what appeared to be a solid alibi at the time. We now know there is a reason to question that solid alibi, and if police had looked deeper all those years ago, they would have discovered his criminal past, something they were bizarrely ignorant of until they looked into him again much later. Whether Cox was the perpetrator or not, it seems that the prevalent theory about the Springfield Three is that they were murdered and their bodies buried somewhere. In 1997, Cheryl and Susie were declared legally dead. Stacy's mother has stated she will never stop looking for her daughter. Based on tips, some investigators believe all three women could have been buried in the Mark Twain National Forest, while others believe the hog farm in Webster County was more likely based on a tip by Garrison. The hog farm was searched in 1993, but no evidence was found. Of course, we all know that hogs are very good at getting rid of evidence when that evidence is human beings. Still, police believed the tip to be credible because the owner of the hog farm had previously been convicted of murder before he died in 1995. I am never going to Springfield. Digs were also conducted on properties in Webster County in August 2002 and in Barry County in April of 2003. The dig in Webster County was triggered by a tip from two women who claimed that two men employed by a local concrete company near Marshfield, Missouri, had a van similar to the one reported by witnesses, and that the two men left the Springfield area shortly after the abductions. Police were only able to verify that the two men worked for the company in Springfield in 1992. The rest seems speculative. In 2007, an investigative journalist, Kathy Baird, and a mechanical engineer, Rick Norland, followed up a tip that the women's bodies might be in the foundation of the southern parking lot at Cox Hospital. No relation to Cox the person. The two used ground-penetrating radar to examine the foundation and search for remains. According to a 2010 posting on the website LA Community Policing, the results of the scan proved to be interesting. However, Baird realized she would need a more reliable way to examine the area. In June 2006, she asked Rick Norland, a ground-penetrating radar specialist, to conduct a scan of the area. Norland has experience in locating bodies beneath the earth and has successfully found graves in the past. He was also one of the experts selected to help at Ground Zero in New York City following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Baird did not give me any details or indication of how many bodies might be there, Norland told AOL News. Soon after beginning the scan, Norland said he discovered three anomalies roughly 3 feet below the surface of the cement. Two were side by side, the third was by itself. The anomalies were about 2 feet wide, and the soil changes were between 5 and 7 feet long. The equipment cannot show bones, but is capable of showing voids one would expect to see if something is buried underground. These anomalies are very consistent with what a grave site would look like, Norland said. The next thing would be to come back in and do positive identification by a core sample, drill down through there and poke a camera or some sort of device in there and examine what is there. That way you can determine what that anomaly is. End quote. Baird and Norland took their findings to the police, but they were skeptical. According to Baird, quote, the detective said, I don't know what it is. They were very adamant about not proceeding forward, end quote. What in the actual fuck? The unresolved nature of the case of the Springfield Three hangs over the Springfield Police Department. In 2010, after a new police chief reopened the case, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children reached out to help the SPD review the case. Over the next 2 years, they reviewed over 25,000 police reports and 5,000 investigative leads. Four investigators were assigned to the task and reorganized records, digitizing a significant number of handwritten documents. The team gave a 3-day presentation in April of 2012 before a panel of criminal experts. Prior to this presentation, three representatives for NCMEC examined the house on East Del Mar and several other locations the women were known to be at that night. According to the Unresolved podcast, several recommendations by the panel were incorporated into the ongoing investigation. Those recommendations received are not items we can publicly release. At this point, investigators had made it clear that there were two feasible paths for them to finally wrap up their ongoing investigation. One, someone had to come forward. In doing so, they'd need to confess to their own involvement or provide information proving someone else's and lead police to some credible evidence. Two, a scientific breakthrough, some kind of new forensic testing that would make existing evidence even more valuable. However, seeing how investigators didn't have much physical evidence to begin with, no crime scene, no bodies, etc., this seemed like an impossibility, barring, of course, a huge discovery. End quote. In 2017, Springfield Police Sergeant Todd King told the Springfield News Leader, quote, how do you wrap your head around three people literally disappearing, with no idea where they went? In a lot of cold cases, you can look back and say, this is probably what occurred. You just can't prove it. With this case, anything could have happened. You don't have anything that says they were abducted, they were harmed. It's this big mystery. End quote. The things that set the Springfield 3 case apart from so many other unsolved murders or disappearance cases is the wealth of effort, investigation, tips, community involvement, and theories surrounding the case. So often, the files on these cases are thin. So often, police corruption or incompetence seems to tank the cases, and they are closed and given up on all too soon. Suspects are not named or interviewed, clues are ignored, families beg authorities to take interest, and possible avenues of investigation are never taken. But that is not so here. The disappearance of Stacy McCall, Susie Streeter, and Cheryl Levitt has been taken up and looked into for decades. The case is like a thorn in the side of the Springfield, Missouri police force, and it is an unforgotten shadow over the community. But that is as it should be. When girls and women, or anyone, fall victim to violence and their fate is unknown, we should rally as a community. We should look into all the dark corners and be unable and unwilling to accept a lack of answers. We should keep searching until we can learn the fates of people who had dreams, ambitions, and attachments in this world, and from whom those things were stolen. I don't know if the Springfield Three will ever be found, but I hope we never stop looking. It is the least we can do. Next time on Strange and Unexplained. In 1934, one man may have thwarted a coup against FDR that would have changed the course of our country's history. And you've likely never even heard the story, Smedley Butler and the plot to overthrow the government. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grab Bag Collab. This episode was written by Eve Kerrigan and me, Daisy Egan, with research by Joe Gurdette. Sound design and engineering by Jeff Devine, music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have an idea for an episode, head to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. I will write back. For more amazing content, join us at patreon.com/grabbagcollab, where for just $5 a month, you get all the Grab Bag exclusive shows, and for $8, you get those, plus Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries and Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. Grab Bag is an all-female and non-binary-owned profit-share network where our contributors get to keep ownership of their shows. We strive to give a platform to those who might not be able to land themselves on a bigger network. Who knows? Maybe you have a podcast idea you'd like to pitch to Grab Bag. We've got live recordings, watch parties, book clubs, and more. Why there's so much going on over at Grab Bag, you'll wonder if we missed the memo on how capitalism works. Join me on Instagram at SNUPod, Daisy Egan, and Grab Bag Collab, or head to the Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like the show, please visit a sponsor with our unique code, give us a quick review and 5 stars, subscribe and download, and tell a friend. Stay strange.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.